This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hey everybody, we're doing it differently this time. I've got a guest. I've got an actual guest. His name is Ken Reed. He's a superstar, or a hotshot, comedian. Comedy and comedian, right?
I think comedy and would be a little bit inappropriate given my gender.
Oh, no, that's...
And also, that's not a word, comedy.
Well...
be like raggedy in.
Yeah, well, that's...
But
I'm trying
be.
To... I'm really trying to do new things here.
That's fine. Yeah, I think we all are. Hotshot, also probably not accurate, but I would like it to be.
I've seen some of your stuff. He's a stand-up comedian, folks. What I wouldn't call him a stand-up comedian, even though he stands and he's funny, I would say that you're a great storyteller.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my stuff is more story-ish, which I always thought was just stand-up, but then it's weird, you know, being in Boston, where we have like a long tradition of very 80s style stand-up. I've had some of those guys be like,
what you do is not stand-up comedy.
And so, you know, that's probably a compliment.
I hope so. Well, so my friend Michael is a co-host, or he's the host, and I'm his co-host on Video Night, suggested you and I talk about a movie for this show that I got here.
He did, and it was a good suggestion, I think. That
yes, I do think it was a good suggestion. I did hear of you before on the Dana Gould Hour, and you were great on there.
Oh, thank you. I was super nervous, because he's like one of my comedy heroes.
It's Dana Gould. Who wouldn't be nervous?
Yeah, I was ridiculously nervous, and couldn't believe that I was actually on that show, because that is one of my absolute favorite podcasts, and one of the reasons I do a podcast, so it was very, very strange.
Right. Earlier on, when Michael and I were developing our Video Night thing, we used to do mega marathon shows, and my reasoning was, Dana Gould Hour isn't an hour, it's like three.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't pull it off.
I think very few people can.
You're a great storyteller. And I think you're actually a blessed person.
Oh.
If you subscribe to God and that there's some kind of possible predestination or even just like a supreme being who just allows things to happen, if you subscribe to that even barely, I think he's blessed you in giving you these crazy stories that you have told us, like your dad's pants being pulled off on an amusement park ride.
Yeah, yeah.
That happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it all happened. It's funny because a friend of mine described me once, he's like, you're like a human singularity.
That's it. And I think you're blessed. Like, other people might be mortally wounded by these things that happen in their lives. Like, it's so embarrassed. But you stand tall.
You have to proclaim
that this has happened, and you own it, and you enjoy it, I guess.
Thank you. Yeah.
It seems like you enjoy
it. Yeah, no, I do. It's weird. I always thought everybody had all these weird experiences, but just either didn't notice or didn't remember. And then as I've grown older, I've come to realize that's not the case. And then I have a bunch of comedian friends who are like, you know, something weird will happen when we're together, and I go, see, weird stuff happens all the time, and they're like, no, this literally only happens when I'm with you.
I have some weird things, but they're not nearly the quality of what you have.
Well, thank you.
You quality strange life, and it's you've been touched. You've been blessed.
I've been blessed with experiencing quality oddness.
Speaking of odd, the movie that I decided we should try you out on is because it was set in the 80s.
Yep.
I asked you the titles of your favorite movie and your favorite weird movie.
Yes.
You gave me Real Genius, and what was the weird one?
And the weird one, Repo Man, did I say?
Repo Man. Okay, yeah, yeah. So I figured this one might be beyond. It's called Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Yes.
My name is Dr. Mercurial Arborea, and I am the founder of the Arborea Institute. Through our unique blend of benign pharmacology, sensory therapy, and energy sculpting, we can guide you to a new, better, happier you.
Hello, Lana. How are you feeling?
I look tired today.
Have you had any headaches?
When you don't know who you are or what you are,
you are about to embark on a great journey. Let the new age of enlightenment begin.
Very good. It's very, very good.
You know, this is always the highlight of my day.
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Beyond that, but I like to challenge my guests. sometimes.
This was a bit of a challenge.
Oh, heck yeah. I've seen it once before, and I saw it again this time, but I took like 5 attempts to watch it this time.
It's very slow.
That's the reason why, because I'd always start it late at night.
It does.
And end up falling asleep in 10 minutes.
Well, it does kind of lull you. It's very atmospheric. Like, it does kind of lull you into a weird space. I don't know if I'd want to sleep to it, but that was one of the positives. How did you even hear about this movie? I mean, I am a huge movie nerd, and the joke I always kind of make, though, is that I stopped caring about things made after the millennium, including people. But I didn't know when this was made, or if this was like a movie that people had heard of, or if it was just totally obscure, because it was like 2010 or 11, I think.
2011, yeah. I guess I like Magnet, or Magnet is Magnolia. Okay. So I followed them on Facebook or something like that.
I see.
And it just popped up on my feed, and I saw the trailer, and I was like, this looks crazy good. And that's what I do have to say about it, is that it looks crazy good. The entire movie looks brilliant.
It looks amazing, and it sounds very good. Like, I loved the soundtrack as well. And I imagine this would cut together to make a really good trailer.
Right.
We'll say
that. Yeah, it's very enigmatic film, and the trailer is equally enigmatic. It just hooks you.
See, that was the thing, though. I felt like it was trying too hard.
Let's get to the story real quick so everybody isn't left behind. Can you tell me the story? Can you attempt to tell me the story?
Even if we give them the story, they still may be left behind. It takes place in, 1983 or 84? I forget the exact date.
83.
It's very David Cronenberg. It's sort of, the beginning opens with sort of a faux, 70s infomercial.
Hello. My name is Dr. Mercurial Arborea, and I am the founder of the Arborea Institute. It has long been my dream
for this sort of new society, colony, new age medicine kind of thing. And then it cuts us into 83, where we assume, is this place? And it's basically these series of weird rooms with this mute girl and a what we presume is a doctor sort of interrogating her on and off. And that's more or less the movie for the first hour. It's sort of just scenes of this guy in a bad wig who looks like Christian Bale but isn't Christian Bale, just sort of interrogating the silent girl. And then we see that she has some sort of telekinetic powers, and she is able to explode a person with her mind. And then we see some sort of weird flashback where this Christian Bale guy...
1966.
Yes, he is some sort of other dimensional being, maybe a demon, maybe an alien, we don't really know, but is conjured into this world by the head of this pseudoscientific organization, and he essentially eats the mother of this girl that we are seeing held prisoner and sort of drugged by some sort of sphere. And the rest of the movie essentially is her escaping from that, more or less, I guess, is the plot. Does that sum it up?
Yes. Yes, that was really good. Thank you. The end of the show. That's the end
Goodbye,
of the show.
Everyone.
You fixed it for me. I now
Perfect.
Know what the movie's about. Thank you.
Perfect.
Bye.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
No, you're not leaving. You're coming back. No, you're staying, Emmy.
All right.
You're not coming
back.
You're staying.
It's like we're reenacting scenes from the movie now.
Yeah, now. Yeah, I figured this is an escape movie. There are a whole bunch of movies like escape movies. Yeah, Escape from New York, Escape from L.A., Escape from...
Witch Mountain.
Well, actually, Facility. I don't know if Witch Mountain had the facility in it. I think the remake
That's
might
true.
Have. But Facility Escape sort of movies. There's a lot, and there's a lot of straight-to-video stuff. And this was ultimately straight-to-video. It's directed by Panos Cosmatos, the son of George Cosmatos. I think his name is George.
Yes, and he wrote this as well, didn't he?
Yeah, Panos wrote it. His dad was the actor's director, so like when Kurt Russell wanted to direct Tombstone, he got him to direct the movie, and so that guy got the credit, but
I
Kurt
see.
Russell really directed it.
He's like the opposite of a ghostwriter.
Yeah, and he did Tango and Cash as well for Stallone.
He would be like a director version of a medium.
Yeah.
He channels the ghost director through his body.
Right, so his dad was this Hollywood mainstay, and then he only has this one movie. And have you ever heard of this movie by Saul Bass called Phase 4?
Yes, about the ants.
Yes, I saw that when I was a kid. And there's this thing where the ants attack a horse.
Yes.
And that image had stuck with me for years until I learned what that movie was. When I saw it as a kid, I think I was like 4 or 5.
Yeah, it was one of those big 70s nature run amok movies, but was way weirder and artsier. It used to be on USA Network a lot, I remember, on like Sunday afternoons they'd show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a very weird choice.
All right, a little bit about me that you don't know. I grew up in Europe, so I missed a lot of stuff.
Okay.
In America. A lot of Americana I got by way of German TV. So like Star Trek was in German.
Which sort of weirdly makes more sense.
It was really fantastic and interesting, and my mom would translate for me. And then we moved here in 85 and I saw Shatner and my mind was blown by how awesome they sounded.
So you only heard a German dub version of Shatner.
Yeah. Yes.
Did that guy attempt to do like a Shatner impression in German?
No, it was like...
Yes, Captain James T. Kirk, Commander der Enterprise. Darf ich vielleicht mal fragen, wer Sie sind?
It's not...
Ich habe keine Ahnung.
Ich bin ein alien.
You're right.
Human being.
So I don't have... You said it was on USA. I'm assuming it was on USA sometime during the 80s. I don't know when USA came out, actually. But I used to
USA
watch...
Yeah, USA started 78 and then sort of changed from being interesting around the mid-90s.
Okay. I saw it in the early 90s. USA Channel. So I never caught their weirdness. Any weirdness that I caught on TV was usually on Bravo before it turned into the desperate whatever.
Yes.
Queer Eye.
And Bravo. Bravo used to show some cool weird stuff.
Yes, and that's where actually I saw Twin Peaks again after the first run of Twin Peaks. That's where I saw.
Yeah, because that's where they had the Log Lady intros that were shot just for Bravo, I think.
Yeah, that's the one I saw. And I also saw this weird clip of They Might Be Giants doing Shoehorn with Teeth.
He wants a shoehorn, the kind with teeth.
As a like a padding for, they had like time between some movie and the top of the hour or something at the end of the movie, so they just threw that on there.
Of course.
Folks, everybody who doesn't listen to my podcast, maybe you will, Ken here has a podcast called
TV Guidance Counselor.
TV Guidance Counselor. I knew what it was, I just wanted you to say it.
Oh, that's fine. I like saying it.
It's your show.
It is. And I'm proud of it.
TV Guidance Counselor, what's the premise of that?
So I own every issue of TV Guide, more or less, from 1965 to about the year 2000. Someone picks an old issue of TV Guide, they go through it, they write down what they would watch in primetime that week, and then they hand me the TV Guide, they have their list, and we go through the week and talk about their choices. That's sort of the very basic premise of the show.
Gotcha. I've listened to it a few times. It's pretty entertaining.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So, I missed a lot of strange American cinema, and I missed, like, as you said, it was on TV a lot, like Phase 4, but I remember the scene from when I was a child. I think I was like 4 years old or so, right before we moved to Italy. So I probably caught it somewhere, somehow, that way.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. It must have been part of some cheap package because it was on like an unusually frequent amount of times on all kinds of television stations for such a weird, obscure movie.
And the reason why I'm talking about Phase 4 is because visually, this movie, Beyond the Black Rainbow, and Phase 4 are like second cousins or something. They have they have a very visual similarity to it. It's literally like he studied Saul Bass's work. Saul Bass directed Phase 4.
Yeah.
It's his only movie that he ever directed.
And he was a design guy.
Yeah. So far, Panos is doing the same thing that Saul Bass did, only directing one movie.
But does he also design movie posters like Saul Bass did?
I don't know. But he did design this movie, and it looks so good. It's neon.
It very much reminded me, in tone and in some of the visuals, it was very David Cronenberg. And the one thing I didn't like that he did with the visuals was he used like a grain filter to try and make it look like it was a 70s movie, which seemed like it just didn't look right. It looked like kind of like the Grindhouse thing, which I didn't like because it was such a clean, very 80s looking movie that reminded me of a combination of sort of Cronenberg, some John Carpenter stuff, and then, speaking of Italy, Dario Argento. Like there were scenes that very much look like Suspiria, the color schemes and stuff.
Yeah. He used a lot of reds.
Absolutely.
Interestingly enough, I don't really like Dario Argento's work. Not very much. But I like the color red.
Right.
Especially in cinema, if it's used correctly. So, yeah, I can totally see what you're talking about with Dario's influence. And he's film director's son, so he's born around this stuff. So he's probably got his hands all over it and just picking and choosing.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Cherry picking everything.
Yeah. And the soundtrack also was the thing that stood out to me because it sounded so much like, you know, Carpenter and Goblin and that very... era was right for the soundtrack. This movie weirdly reminded me a lot of the movie Cube, another Canadian movie.
Yeah. I was going to mention that it was Canadian. You picked that up.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they're both Canadian. Cube is a bit more workman-style direction, but it's a much more entertaining film.
Yeah, Cube has more of a point.
And it's much more brisk.
Yeah. I mean, this was definitely like I'm going to take Cube and make it arty kind of thing at times.
Yeah, Cube is a good example of an escape movie.
Or Fortress. You ever see Fortress?
That's a really great escape movie. Have you seen any of the sequel Cubes?
No, are they any good? They try to like explain what it was in the sequels, right? Is that...
No, they don't.
Okay.
They don't at all. Hypercube is terrible. It's the sequel, but Cube Zero is not half bad.
Okay.
And that's actually more about the technicians who work on the cube, but they still don't explain anything. That's the good thing about that.
That movie's kind of been lost in time a little bit. It doesn't get name-checked very often, but it's such a good movie. It's just like a Twilight Zone episode, basically.
Yeah, if you think about it, it's like the four figures in Search for an Exit.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's actually a stuff that I really tend to go for when it comes to mindbender films.
Right.
I go for really great, big, fleshed out Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah, I think that's what the directors are going for too. I think what the problem with this movie is you have a really good visual artist who is not a good writer.
That might be it, or he just... Well, what I read about this movie and him directing it, writing it, and whatever, is that he said he wasn't too concerned with the plot.
Yeah.
He was really concerned about immersing you into this surreal state, to be on a sort of a drug trip without having to be on drugs.
See, and I feel like he should have been more concerned with the plot, because he is concerned with the plot. It's sort of not trippy enough for that to be true, and not plot-centric enough for me to be engaged with it. I think it ends up being not one direction of the other enough. Like, I feel like the best example of a sort of trippy movie with no plot that is engaging would be like Eraserhead,
okay,
where you're just kind of like, there's no plot in this movie, but you can't stop watching it. And this movie tried to have a plot, like just by the very nature of having an escape.
Yeah,
there's a plot.
That's a plot. The escape. That might be all you need. That means that's all Cube had.
Right. And this might have been better as like a 22-minute Twilight Zone length story, because we get a lot.
It probably would have, because it would have been the last part of the film. I'm confused about the doctor. Not our old doctor, Dr. Arborea, who set up the institute.
Yes.
But I am confused about his second. The guy in 1966 who goes into the goo and comes out all black. It's like tar. And then he bites the lady.
Yeah, I took it as like some sort of weird Lovecraftian thing where this other dimensional being needed a vessel. Like it needed a human shape so that it could procreate to make this human monster / alien hybrid. Like it wasn't a physical presence, so it needed someone to sacrifice their body for it, which is kind of what I was thinking.
Okay, so let's just go with that.
Yeah.
He comes out of the thing, kills the mom. The daughter grows up to be like a teenager or late teen, and then she has psychic powers. So what's the point with the daughter? Like, they're doing experiments and stuff. I just can't figure that out.
So my theory on this one is that the Doc Arborea, he was attempting to start some sort of new society or like the next step in evolution by doing this, but had clearly turned somewhat demented or his mind snapped. So it sounded like he had a plan and then kind of lost his way a little bit, which is why this sort of creature hybrid person sort of had to take on the role of pretending to sort of be him and also be his caretaker. So it sounds like the guy had a plan and then just lost his mind or became useless was what I kind of took from it.
Yeah. There's a point at the movie. There's a few points. There's a point where the second, I'm just going to call him the sec. So the second he walks in on this lady who's just laying on a couch, and it's a very boring and weird conversation. And she says something later that when she sees him, and he's bald at this point, that he hasn't taken his medication. He's not wearing his appliances.
Barry, you're not wearing your appliances.
I don't want to wear them anymore.
It's just you haven't let me see you without them in a long time.
Yes, that's what it is.
Which is hair, and I don't know what else. Maybe
eyebrows.
Eyebrows, contacts, I don't know. So there's something odd with this guy, but it's never expressed exactly what. There's the scene later where he ends up killing, I think he kills Dr. Arborea by injecting him with something in his foot.
Yes, although it seems like he had been injecting him with stuff for years and just this time overdosed him.
Yeah, it's like, see you later, have some fun while you die.
Yeah, and I think what the director was trying to do was draw a parallel parallel between the second and the daughter character, because they were both being drugged. Like, there was that weird cube thing that was sort of keeping the woman drugged, and this guy, they were making him take medication to keep him drugged, and they were both kind of breaking out at the same time. So I think they were trying to draw some sort of weird parallel there, but I'm not exactly sure what. What I did like about the appliances, though, was that when the movie started, I was like, this guy has a terrible wig. I know it's supposed to be a period piece, so they've given him like a late 70s, yeah, early 80s haircut, but it's really bad. I'm like, oh, they've explained why. Okay, I enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At least he's got some writing chops, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of like one of my complaints about M. Night Shyamalan is that he's a great director and a terrible writer, but the director's ego is too big to not hire M. Night Shyamalan the writer.
Yeah.
So I think that could be this guy's downfall.
Yeah, maybe it's just his one thing that he just had to do, and he might never ever make a movie ever again.
That's possible.
And I actually wouldn't be sad about it. I really, actually, really do like this movie. Except. And the accepts are really, 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 really big accepts. It's slow. It's droning. It really knocks me out. And this past 2 weeks, my dog, he's really old now. I think he's senile, so in the middle of the night, he constantly wants to go outside and just sit.
Yeah.
But he's old, and he might chase after a cat and then hurt himself, which has happened. So I try to pull him back inside. So I have to do this like 2 or 3 times a night, and I'm kind of without sleep. So when I did try to watch this movie again, it would put me to sleep really quickly.
Yeah.
The soundtrack is partially responsible for that, because it's a synth soundtrack, and it is kind of a droning sounding soundtrack. And then the visuals are, they're both static and sometimes fluid. They move around interestingly. It's almost like, in a weird way, without trying to be misleading, like staring at one of those oil things in the 60s, the psychedelic projections on a wall.
Yeah.
But you're like really up close to it, so it's obscured. So it just, it's the effect that it would have.
Yeah.
Hypnotic, I suppose.
Yeah, it was very hypnotic, but it seemed like a guy that, if we still really had music videos, should have directed like 10 music videos before he directed a movie and all this stuff out of his system that way.
I agree with you. I don't know anything else that Panos has ever done except be the son of a more accomplished director.
Yeah, it reminded me, did you see House of the Devil, the Ty West movie?
Yeah, I have.
It reminded me of the things that I had a problem with that movie, in that I get why these guys do it, but they clearly want to set a movie in the period that the movies they like were.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was making movies set in the 80s, this is set in the 80s, and there's no reason to do that other than that you like movies from then.
Right.
And it had the same kind of thing where it was very, 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 very slow, and then at the end, almost too fast.
Oh, right, so right, right. Here you do have that.
Yeah.
It actually picks up to the appropriate pace, but in comparison to the first half, it's really, really fast.
And I don't think that works. I think he was trying to do it like and now it's like, you don't know what's happening. It's hitting you over the head. It's, you know, we're in the real world kind of now, but it's just disjointed. It didn't really work for me.
Right. I get what you're saying. So right before she gets out, she has to evade these tall, I guess, clones with baby faces.
Yeah, little white baby faces.
What do you make of that other than what I just said?
So that, I assume, was like the first attempt by this guy to create this new race or society, whatever the hell he was trying to create. It seemed like that was their sort of version 1.0.
And then they end up making workers, drones.
Yeah.
But then there's also a body laying on the ground as she leaves, and it has a bulbous head, and it attacks her. It's a mutant. It's actually like a bio-zombie sort of thing.
And it looks exactly like the second guy in his, you know, current state, too. That I found confusing.
Veiny heads and all. Yeah, it's... So I think that guy was just an experiment. Some mutant. That's actually what he's credited as a mutant.
Ah, mutant gone wrong.
Yeah, so there's just one of those, and there's at least two of those other tall drone things.
Which seemed to just let her go. Like, it seemed like they sympathized with, like, they were almost...
Right, it took off. It's like all right, I'm gonna be ominous here and quiet for a second. I'm gonna show you my creepy face, and that's it. Solidarity.
Yeah, like, leave and then come back and set us free.
Yeah, something. Like, so she gets out, and he gets out, and he chases her down, but before that, he kills a couple of Heshers.
Yeah, I do want to say, I think my favorite scene in the entire movie is right before she gets out. She walks through the most accurate depiction of a boring work break room I think I've ever seen on film.
Right, that was pretty great. And the sofa.
Yeah, and they spend a lot of time on that.
The love seat is that burnt orange, burnt umber flower pattern love seat that's in everybody's basement.
Yeah, that was like a perfect best depiction of the era I'd seen. And I loved how it looked like every waiting room I had to sit in with my dad when, like, we were getting the car fixed.
Right, as a kid, yeah. You know?
For whatever reason, I was like, I really like this. And it came right after the mutant attacking her and the other thing, and it was so yeah. normal. I thought that was a cool thing, you know?
I agree with you about that setting, that it's the juxtaposition of those two, the sterile environment and then that everybody's been here. We can all relate. But then there's this performance thing that I actually found to be rather interesting. When she gets out, she's walking through the marsh, and she almost looks like she's in ecstasy.
Yep.
Because
she's feeling real stuff.
So there's some really cool subtext to this. It's the first time her feet have ever squished through mud.
That other people would be like, ooh.
Yeah, and she's just like slowly almost wincing, but it also looks like she's in ecstasy. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and it feels like the further away she gets from that biosphere, like the more the, you know, drug or whatever is wearing off too. So she's sort of coming to also, like
yeah.
she's waking up.
So eventually she victors over the bad guy. I don't want to give too much away, because we already have.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible.
Right? I mean, I know what you mean.
Well, I also thought the stoner characters were a little bit too, like, comedic.
I gotta take a look.
Thanks for telling me.
Let's get bent.
Like, it was too much, like, comedy relief in this kind of grim, unrelenting movie.
Yeah.
To have two kind of comedy stoner characters, it was a little bit...
But I will tell you that I am very... Okay, I'm not vindictive. I'm not a vengeful person, but I don't subscribe to bullies... need to get killed in movies because I was bullied sort of thing. I don't do that. But I felt like, all right, those two dudes, who's gonna miss them?
Yeah, exactly. I think they were classic doobage stereotypes of like the Friday the 13th variety. It was like, you got killed because you're the sex people, or you got killed because you're a doobage guy.
Yeah.
And they were the classic doobage guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I did really? I really hated when they did get their comeuppance that the second was all like, did you effer?
Yeah, right.
Effer. And I'm like, what is this about? This totally seems to ruin what I had thought the connection was here. It really seemed to undermine what I thought the guy was going for.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe I was just ready to be done with it, but
yeah,
that's kind of petty.
Yeah, it was like, you've been looking at my girl? It was like a weird...
And
like,
she
was
she just barely stumbled upon those guys.
Yeah, I don't even know if both of them even saw her.
Uh-uh, I don't think so. That's just weird.
Yeah.
I asked you online, when you finished watching this, did you watch all the way to the end of the credits?
I did.
And there's an action figure of one of those clone things.
Yes.
Just laying on the ground.
Yes.
What the heck does that mean? What does that imply?
This might have been from watching too much television, but I went with the, was this all in the mind of an autistic child who was playing with their toys, saying elsewhere, kind of ending.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I don't think that you probably have watched too much TV.
Well, yeah.
Hence your podcast, but I agree with you. I think it's sort of like a bottle universe sort of thing in somebody's mind.
Yeah, and if you look at the way kids play with action figures, a lot of times they won't have a linear story, you know? It'll just be like, I hate you,
And the motivations of the nurse, that was weird to me. Earlier on in the movie, the nurse, she looked through the girl's file and she seemed disgusted.
Yeah, what they had done or whatever.
And then she goes and she serves the girl.
Right.
She turns into a bully outright, just straight up.
Yeah, and it was like, do we hate the things?
Is your mom dead?
Yeah.
Good. What? That came from nowhere and it was weird.
It seemed like there was a scene missing. You know, I was like, is he trying to say like, we hate the things we don't understand? Or like, you know, if you look at the Cronenberg movies that this was very much influenced by, and you look at the institutes and all the Cronenberg stuff, like, you know, in The Brood or even Rabid and Scanners and that kind of stuff, the leaders of those groups, like in Videodrome, the Brian Oblivion character, they're very charismatic, and you see why the people are following them. This movie, I did not get that.
Yes. Well, that was Dr. Arborea. When he's doing the talking on the thing, you can see that he's sort of like a professor guru sort of thing. But beyond that...
Yeah, I was like, the nurse, the other woman who's kind of the motherly character for the second, I was like, I'm not buying why they would still be around. You know, are they prisoners or are they following?
And they're the only three people there. Why are they the only three people there? Why aren't there more?
And I was just like,
budget.
Like, it took me out of the movie, you know, where I was like, oh, it's because of budget.
Budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I think he kind of didn't know what he wanted the reveal to be and was just trying to put in, like, multiple reveals. So, like, when she comes out and there's that scene in that break room, I got a sense, like, they want the scene to be,
oh, they were in our world the whole time. You thought it was outer space, but it's really Earth, Canada, circa 1984.
Yeah, and that...
But then I'm like...
That didn't quite work if that was the reveal.
I'm also kind of a snob about movies that tell you they're set in a certain year because I feel like the movie should show that to you without saying saying it's 1984, or else if it's not able to do that, then there's no reason to set it in 1984.
Right.
And that obviously immediately took the wind out from under It Was Our World the Whole Time thing. So I'm like, okay, then that's not the reveal. And that reveal would make sense too, where you get these stoner characters, because you're like, oh, now it's just regular dudes that are interacting with these things you thought was in outer space, but it's actually Earth. So it just seemed like...
it's a blender, right? A lot of these weird movies that I like are, or try to like at least, are they take ideas from all sorts of places that just throw them in a blender.
It's true.
And it's sometimes a really great concoction, and sometimes it's just kind of okay.
I think that all the good blender type movies though have like a thesis, like they have a point. Like even Eraserhead, the point is I'm scared of being a parent. And like that's evident when you watch it. And this movie just didn't seem to have a thesis. It was kind of like, all right, I need an ending. Here's four twist endings, and none of them kind of work.
Yeah.
Up to and including the action figure piece. You know, it was like, oh, and are we supposed to feel ominous because of the last shot of the girl was her kind of walking toward those suburban houses? Are we supposed to think that she is dangerous, that she is a monster, but in the shape of a girl that looks, you know, not menacing, and she's going to ingratiate her way into this suburban world and destroy it? Because I didn't get that kind of sense. It wasn't one thing or the other. It never kind of decided to commit to any one direction. Not the band One Direction.
I think it needed script level. I think it needed an editor at the very beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
Just...
yeah.
Somebody George Lucas this guy. They just George Lucas'd him. Yes.
And just go, dude, what is your point? Pick one point and we'll do that.
Yes. Yes. No, it's all good. No, it's good. Do what you want. Here's the money. Do what you want.
And I feel like he, like, if you ask this guy now about all the twist endings, he would make up some kind of BS that would be like, I'm making a comment about twist endings by putting in 40 of them that don't work. Yeah.
That's a bit Peter Jackson-y.
True. But it was a shame because, you know, a bad movie is a bad movie, but nothing's more frustrating than a movie with potential or a movie with stuff you really like that's weighed down by stuff you really hate, because...
that's what this movie is for me.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, it looks great, it sounds great, there are things that should be interesting, and they're not.
Yep, and that's Beyond the Black Rainbow.
It sounds like a weird blaxploitation title for like a 70s, like The Wiz. Like The Wiz would be like The Wiz, Beyond the Black Rainbow.
Well, more like an adult film from the 70s too.
That's true, that's true.
You know, like Beyond the Green Door or whatever. You know?
Yes.
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
And then I hated how they shoved that in too when the second comes out when he's first not wearing his appliances. I can see beyond the black rim. It was just like, oh, come on, man.
I've got the titular line in the movie.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It didn't even need a line. It didn't need a line, did it?
No, not
it. It could have just been this enigmatic title that means nothing. There's a movie, and I don't know if we're ever going to watch it on this, called Blue Monkey.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that movie. It has nothing to do with the title.
No monkey.
No.
There's no monkey.
It's about a giant killer insect, basically. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. I don't know if there's even a reference to Blue Monkey.
It might have, I mean,
in the script, in this.
When that came out, Shock of the Monkey was very popular by Peter Gabriel.
Yeah. It could have been just a title like that where you're like, all right, I guess I get the title.
It sounds
because
like...
it's all sci-fi weird, swoozy woozy, you know?
Have you ever heard those stories about they're shooting a movie and they have to have a fake title to like hide the movie, or people wouldn't do the movie? And like,
yeah.
It sounds like that, and then they just forgot to change the title to the real title.
Yeah, right. What's this called? I for Thanos, what? He's like, I'm busy eating, dude. What?
Right. Just
but whatever.
Just use the one on the script. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Did it bother you how much the guy looked like Christian Bale though?
No, to me he didn't really look like Christian Bale, but I've seen him in other sci-fi channel productions, and I don't like talking about people's appearances in a way in which I'm like, I can't stand what he looks like, but I can't stand what the guy looks like.
Yeah, it was just
he's a fine performer. He just looks like this guy that the only roles that he can play is a creep, because that's the DNA that he's been given.
Yeah, he exudes creep. But anytime someone looks too much like another actor, it always takes me out of it a little bit, because I'm like, you're not Christian Bale, but you look too much like him.
I see what you're saying. He's got similar sharp features like Christian Bale.
And he seemed to be acting like I think Christian Bale would overact were he in that part.
Hmm.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
But it was not a movie I wouldn't rush to watch this again.
No, I don't think that you should. I think everybody should watch it maybe once or try to.
Yeah.
Just try to watch it once and then fall asleep. And that's what happens to me if I try to watch it, which I don't think I will ever again.
If there was ever a movie that screamed out to have an isolated score track on the DVD so you could just watch it and listen to the score, it's this movie.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, because it was on Netflix, it's been on streaming services, and I was thinking about getting the Blu-ray, and no, I'm sorry. I don't think I'm going to do that.
I don't think it's worth it. I think you could take the Blu-ray money and then buy used copies of, like, David Cronenberg's entire catalog, and then just buy some Tangerine Dream records and go to town.
Well, I think that's it. I think we're done eviscerating this movie. Well, Ken, it's been lovely having you. Lovely, I say.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. I actually wouldn't mind you joining the show again sometime down the line in the future. Of course, not in the past.
Technology may help us.
Because in the past, you'd have to do some sort of juggling, like time travel juggling. Juggling while you're time traveling.
I could do it.
You can?
I'll practice.
Okay.
What I have to do is go beyond the Black Rainbow to beyond the past episodes.
So... That's Ken Reed.
Thank you.
Everybody cheers.
Good cheers.
And thank you for being here. And that's it. We're done.
Yeah. Happy to do it again sometime.
See you later, everybody.
Goodbye. Was it me who's walking? I hate you. Ah!
Please subscribe and rate on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at WDWKW74. Or email us at WDWKW74@gmail.com.